too many people give up, my generation especially, just give up. And they stay in ministry, but what they do is they take their dream, put it in a box because of the difficulties, stick it in a closet and lock it. And then they just exist instead of thriving. Now, we've been called to thrive.
What's up, guys? It's Josiah. This is the Young Adults Today podcast. And calling all young adults ages 18 to 30 and their leaders, we want to invite you and your young adult ministry this May 17th through the 19th to Alexandria, Minnesota at Lake Geneva Christian Center. We are having the Young Adult Weekend Camp for Young Adults. And this is going to be an amazing time to gather together with hundreds of other young adults from across the state of Minnesota, across the Midwest. It won't be the same without you there. You can find out more details and sign up when you visit youngadults.today/the-WKND. $10 off with promo code podcast. And we want to let you know that today's episode is presented by our friends at the Church Plant Masterclass put out by Rocket Media. If you've ever thought about planting a church, maybe you're a part of a church plant or a church that plants other churches, you can get 50% off of the Church Plant Masterclass using the promo code YAT50. That's YAT50 for 50% off of the brand new Church Plant Masterclass. The link is in the show notes. You can find out more information when you visit churchplantmasterclass.com. And on to our conversation, where we went on the road to Cold Spring, Minnesota, to a church called River of Life, pastored by Denny Curran. And I just want to let you know that since we took this audio equipment and video equipment on the mic, it's not quite the same setup you're used to, but man, I was blessed and Micah was blessed by our conversation with Pastor Denny Curran. Enjoy. We know you'll be inspired right here on the Young Adults Today podcast.
Oh, well, what's up, guys? Hope you're feeling alive right now. Welcome to the Young Adults Today podcast, where we talk about so many different things when it comes to leadership and your growth, your development, your spiritual journey as a leader, leading the 18 to 30-year-old. I'm Micah Keneally.
I'm Josiah Keneally. We're your hosts. Yeah. Joining us is our guest, Pastor Denny Curran.
Great to be here.
Well, we are so thrilled to have you. And Josiah, for the listener who does not yet know who he is, where he's at, what God has been up to, do you want to introduce our guest today?
We're with one of our heroes today. And 28, I think, years ago, Pastor Denny, you'll hear some of his story throughout the podcast conversation. So whether you're watching or listening, but Pastor Denny is the lead pastor at River of Life Church. We're here in Cold Spring. And anytime I'm with you, Pastor Denny, I'm encouraged. I'm fired up.
Just too kind.
And but here's what happens too. There is the River of Life Express, and how kids get to church is their parents drop them off, and it is the River of Life Express. Our kids have been here, and we snuck into the kids area where there's a climbing gym and a foam ball pit, just all kinds of stuff. But we want for the listener and the leader today to be encouraged. We're in a series called Such a Time as This, and gave you just a brief introduction, but we think the world of you. Thanks for doing this conversation. Can you kick it with your story of life and marriage and then ministry?
Well, North Central was a big part of my life. It was there where I met my wife. And, you know, I say the first time I laid my eyes on her, I knew that, you know, I wanted to get to know her. And so that all came together towards my senior year. And between junior and senior year, I was an intern here in Painesville, Central Minnesota, and still dating her. And then after that, we decided to get married and ended up full time in Painesville in 1976. So 47 years ago, right after we got married. So that's how long we've been in ministry. And that's kind of where it all started in Painesville.
Oh my gosh. Well, I absolutely love it. And we know that you're obviously called to ministry. You're doing it. You're doing it well. But when it comes to like your passion point about ministry overall, like what is that passion and what stirs your heart to keep on going?
Well, there's a lot of passions. And I just if I don't have it, it's hard to get out of bed. And a lot of people, they say, they just can't get out of bed. Well, I can get out of bed because I've got just a lot of things I'm passionate about. I'm passionate about the lost. That's the main thing. I need to win the lost. If people aren't coming to Christ, or if God's not doing something in the lives of people, ministry gets pretty mundane, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but it's so exciting to watch someone getting delivered from alcohol or restored marriage or someone even healed miraculously. So we see those things, and it says, you know what, all those hard times, it's really worth it because we're seeing the hand of God move in this area. So those are things I'm passionate about, is the move of God in the way that we read about in the book of Acts. There's two things that are highlighted in the book of Acts that I see is prayer and miracles. And if those aren't, I think, an occurrence in our life, that maybe something's out of order. So that's my passion. Lost people, Jesus, my family, the ministry, the church. Those are the things that keep me moving.
Oh my gosh. Dive into those deep for a minute, if you will, Pastor Denny. Prayer and miracles. What does your daily prayer life look like as a person? And then we'll come back to circles, but just go to miracles. But if you can go there, what does your daily prayer life look like?
Well, Ian Bounds said, if we don't, he won't, you know, and some people have said, well, I don't like that theology. Well, I've kind of proved it, I think, and I think everyone has. If we don't, nothing happens. If we do, he will, you know? So we see that happening. So I've always prayed at North Central as a Catholic. Before I came to North Central, I was in a lot of trouble, and there were things going on in my life. I was just tired of being an idiot, you know, and sick and tired of being sick and tired, bringing shame on myself and my parents, and knelt down by my bed, and I prayed. I prayed this prayer, almost word for word. Lord, if you're real, prove yourself to me right now. And when I turned around, there was something behind me. It was a dark room, but I knew that God was there. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I felt a presence like I've never felt around you. I mean, there's a good presence here, mm-hmm. but that presence was something else. Mm-hmm. I wasn't accustomed to it. So I ran upstairs out of my bedroom, locked the bathroom door, and just shook. I thought, what happened? And about 20 minutes later, I opened the door to my bedroom and said, God, if you get out of my bedroom, I'll come and finish that prayer. And I think it was all prophetic. And I said, I'd go anywhere and do anything to share with people you want me to share what just happened. And that was the first prayer I prayed all my life as a Catholic. Nothing against the Catholic Church or slamming them, but I never experienced an answer to prayer like that. Mm. And God began to speak to me just with impressions about what to do. And ended up at North Central. My prayer life kind of fell apart there. And we had a great college president, E.M. Clark, said, you know what, here's what's going to happen when you come to school. You've got this prayer life. It's not going to be what you hoped it was when you came here, but it'll come back together. So I kind of lived in that. And then went to Painesville as an intern. And I didn't know what to do. I'm a Catholic. I didn't know. I light candles. Okay. You know, so I didn't know what to do. So I had to pray like my life depends on it. And I've done that all my life because I've always been in situations where I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I'm in a jam. My back's up against the wall. I need to find out what to do. So I had these prayer moments, good prayer moments, but it was a fall afternoon. I usually go fishing and walking across the parking lot, looking out at the lake, and said, oh boy, I can hardly wait to go fishing. It was after a Saturday, Sunday night service. And the Lord said, no, I want you to get up early and pray. I said, well, you got to be kidding me. Fish are biting. So I responded to that. So I went to, this was probably 30 some years ago, went home and told my wife, I'm just not going to go fishing tonight. She said, wow, it's a perfect night. I said, I know it is, but I'm going to get up early and pray. And got up early in the morning, next morning. And I don't know, it was 4, 5, 6, whatever. And just prayed like my life depended on it. And for the things that were about to happen in my life, I think it was the good foundation. Right? Lord said, hey, listen, some things are going to take place in your life that may not be something you want or enjoy. You know, so I was enjoying Painesville. It was the nicest church in outstate Minnesota, and things were going well, but that was all coming to an end. And then pretty soon this came into being. And that was really difficult. Would I have ever been able to do what I did here without that prayer? I doubt it. If we don't, he won't, you know. And so we got here. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know how to plan a church. So I prayed like my life depended on it. And I got up early every morning because I had no income. I was building a house they gave me the loan on character, not on money. So I thought, oh boy, I could just ruin that character thing right now if I don't come up with some money to pay for this house. But we did, you know, it happened. So that's kind of been my prayer life. Get up early, but always be in a position where you need God. Mm-hmm. If you don't have dreams that are bigger than you, then you don't need God. Mm-hmm. And chances are your dreams aren't from God. God's always going to give you something bigger than yourself. And I think we've all heard that before, you know?
Right.
So I've had to pray, you know, and during those times with no money and building a house, I would be in my office and I didn't have money to put in my car to go back home. And so I'd open the mail and here'd be a letter from one of the kids in my youth group said, hey, God impressed me to give you money. It was a check for $500,000. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a kids from my youth ministry that just said, hey, you've always told us you wanted to trust God for everything, even clothes on your back. You're doing it. You proved it. Here's a little thank you. So and then coming into the building process here, we've always been biting off more than we could chew as a human. But but that's where I get up early and pray, because if I don't, I'm dead. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to make it.
Oh my gosh. For even taking prayer to the person who is maybe like just even going to open up this chapter that we're talking about, because we're talking about the miracles and the provision of God and just what that is and how that can play such a significant role in our life, in our ministry, in our leadership. For the leader who's listening, who's just wrestling and like, I don't even know where to start, but I'm in charge of this young adult group. I'm doing next gen ministry. I don't know how to pray. Like my life depends on it because I'm relying on my own strength. Mm-hmm. Like, what would you say to the person who's maybe just starting out, trying to find their rhythm and cadence, and they do have a passion for Christ, but they've been functioning in their own strength in the process?
Yeah, I think what I'm doing, I'm going to do it now here in a couple of weeks. I do this in different seasons of my life. I go to a place called Zion Faith Homes. It's in Zion, Illinois. It's a place where pastors go pray. And you just lay down, and I spend a week or a week and a half just burying my face in the carpet and praying, God, I want something to happen. I don't want to be in ministry if it's just going to be getting out of bed, playing a golf a little bit with some people, coming back to church and seeing kind of in a maintenance mode. I wanted something more aggressive than that. So that's what I do. And I think the one that really made a difference was when I went a 10-day fasting to Waupaca, Wisconsin, called the superintendent, said, hey, my wife lives in Appleton, her folks are there. Can I use a cabin just to spend 10 days in prayer and fasting? I said, perfect. There's nothing there those 10 days. So I just went out and just prayed and fasted for 10 days. And my desire was this, is that I've been given an opportunity to get out of ministry, but my parents said, hey, why don't you get out? We'll give you some money to start a business. And I said, you know, I'm not sure. And that's that whole period of time where God said, get up early in the morning, start praying, because these things, I didn't know they're going to come, but all these things began to happen. And so I just said, okay, God, I'll stay in ministry, but I don't want it to be boring. I hate to say this, but pastors bore me. I mean, they're complaining about something or they're critical about something. They've got no vision, no drive, no direction. And there's got to be something more. And that's where our connection to God has to be. Mm-hmm. Someone asked me the other day, what do you think of all this woke stuff in the church? I said, you know what? All this transgender confusion and stuff. I think what's happening is God is saying, hey, listen, you don't have the answers unless you can get close to me. We've got to really cling to him. And be as close to him in our relationship. And from that, we're going to be able to reach that generation. Mm-hmm. We're going to be able to reach those who are saying, listen, I'm confused. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's what I do. And I suggest every leader to do that before you get in ministry, mm-hmm. is to find those places. I've used Forest Lake, Geneva at times, Roger Stacy's cabin. And I've used the superintendent's cabin in Waupaca, and they go to Zion Faith Homes. I'm going back to Zion Faith Homes probably here in the next few weeks just to say, okay, here's the last chapter. Let's do it right. So start it that way end it that way.
That's good. Yeah.
You know, Pastor Denny, anyone in America could walk into River of Life Church here in Cold Spring and be inspired and see what you've seen for years, because it's here now. 28 years ago, you saw it. It was more than you could chew and bite off. There was a vision from God to win the lost. It's happening now. But in the process, talk about vision's just an idea until somebody moves, until somebody stands up and says, we're going to go climb a mountain. We're going to take a bold step of faith. We're going to share the gospel. And even the gospel, we've got to respond and say yes to Jesus. But I think that where I'm at, I see some things that don't exist yet. God gave me a vision in 2012. I haven't seen it yet. We were talking about it on the drive up. Micah and I were, and there's this vision. Talk about the language of vision and dreams. And as we segue from prayer life, that is the foundation. I think God is the dream giver, mm-hmm. and burden keeps it fresh. But what are your thoughts on a vision for the lost, soul winning, a vision for God's plan for your life?
Well, all my vision, I think, has been birthed in prayer. Without that, it is to, and it's seeing things. Someone asked me, when's the right time to retire? And I said, when you lose vision. No, I'm talking age. No, it's not age. It's when you lose vision, get out of town and stick with the vision. Well, Walt Disney never made it to the completion of Disneyland. He died. And they got up and honored him and said, oh, we wish Walt was here. And someone yelled, we wish Walt was here to see this. And someone yelled and said, he did. You know, we see it in our spirit. We know it's going to happen. I saw the sanctuary we had here way back when, praying in the corner of my office in an alley in Cold Spring. We had nothing but this dumpy little office, but I saw what we have today. And without that, without vision, it's really difficult. Again, the thing that drives you to get out of bed and pray in the morning is, man, this isn't going to happen unless something supernatural is connected to this. So, we hear statements. Helen Keller says, you know, so she was asked, what's worse than being blind? And she said, because she was blind, deaf, and dumb. Mm-hmm. So she was asked that question, what's worse than being blind? She says, to have vision, or to have sight without vision. And so everything I do is driven out of that vision. In fact, the Bible says in the last days, that's us, you guys. Mm-hmm. Well, this isn't the last days. This is the last days. Mm-hmm. I'll pour out my spirit in all flesh, and the young will see visions, and the old will dream dreams. You know, so that's this generation. That's our opportunity. So we see all the things that are going on in America and actually throughout the world that a lot of Christians are concerned about. You know, what's happening in Israel, what's happening with our country, what's happening with our public education. Man, we have got them right where we want them. These people are messed up inside, so they're going to an extreme that we say, hey, that's dark. But we have the opportunity to say, in our darkness, we've got this light. Mm-hmm. And we can present this light to this generation. And I believe, not all, but a lot are going to come running and say, hey, we're attracted by what you have. And that's what we're having here is those things. But that's the vision. Don't enter ministry without vision. Get it out of your prayer life. Those prayer retreats I go on, and that's where my vision comes from, is birthed out of there.
So good. And I think that's why the Bible said, without vision, the people perish.
Right.
Right. And we are seeing people perishing all around us. We're seeing people's decisions and their life and everything. But God always wants to surprise us, because He's a God of miracles. He's the God of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. He is ever, never changing, and always patient with us as people and humanity. And I just would love to hear, you've seen miracle after miracle, but what has surprised you most recently?
Gosh. Recently,
this could be 10 years for you. I don't really know what recently is.
Well, I met with my staff here a couple years ago. It was 2021, and said, guys, I'm done. I'm leaving. And he said, unless I can build the sanctuary, which is my final goal. That's the end of my vision, or not the end of the vision, but a part of that completion of this vision. And if you'll stick with me, that will I'll go for it. But if you feel it's more than you can handle, fine. And Ashley Benoit, or Ashley Gleitz, you know, she started crying and said, hey, wait, this is why we're here, to complete that vision. You know, so those are moving moments for me. Mm-hmm. So I went to a board, and I got some conservative guys in there saying, hey, I met with my staff, and you know, it's that, and I'm probably time to step down unless you guys stick with me and are supportive of this new sanctuary. And they looked at each other and said, let's do it. I said, well, okay, the only way we're going to do it is if we can do it debt-free. And we figured it'd be about $4.5 million. So that's a pretty big chunk to swallow. And, oh, my goodness. So, okay, they're with me. My staff's with me. So then we went into our capital campaign ourselves. My staff did an incredible job, you know, just putting this thing together. Really impressed a lot of business people in the church, and the community was impressed by this. And we did our capital campaign. We met with our architect before the capital campaign and drew out what we wanted, mm-hmm. and told them that they told us it'd probably be $4.5 million. Well, that's a God size that's bigger than me, you know. So they came back and said, no, it's not going to be 4.5. No, the cost have really gone up, mm-hmm. and it's going to be $7.2 million. And everyone, my building committee that we newly formed, the board and my staff said, what's it going to hurt to go for it? And I'm waiting for that, because if my leadership's not with me, it's tough to go anywhere. So I've got my whole leadership team's with me. And we did the capital campaign, pulled it off in March, or on November 1st, started on a Monday. The 21st ended on a Sunday, which would make 21 days of prayer and fasting. I called the church to 21 days of prayer and fasting. Great time to do it before the holidays. So, and then that 21st would be our Miracle Sunday. So on the second Tuesday of that month, I was here just praying about noon, and I just felt a gush of something warm explode. And I walked out of the office. Marissa Thomas is right there. I said, hey, we're going to make it. We're going to make the $7.2 million. Something just broke. I know that God's going to do something. And I've never had that happen when I fasted. When I fasted, I've always had my body tell me, you're nuts. You're going to die. You're starved to death. But this was really an easy time. And I knew we'd make it. Long story short, we didn't raise the $7.2 million. We raised $9.2 million.
It's incredible.
Wow.
Incredible.
And in the midst of it, I think this is so key, at least for me it is. The vision is for the lost.
Right.
The vision isn't just a nicer building or new or whatever. The vision and burden is the lost in the central Minnesota
community. That's excellent. Yeah.
And I think the other thing to talk about is the youth of this church, all while the capital campaign is going on, the youth are raising money for like crazy for missions, right? Speed the Light. What happened during that time with Speed the Light and with missions? Because your church isn't just
doing one thing.
There's such a time as this for every generation, for every nation, near and far. And I think that's really key. Talk about missions for a second.
Well, missions. We say that missions opens the door for miracles. We've said that since we built the church. Try to teach my young Catholics that when we started the mission movement was that when we started the church in July. And the end of July, I said, hey, we got a letter from General Counsel saying we're one of the last. We'd given $100 to missions. Found out there was maybe out of 12,000 churches, maybe 1,000 or 1,500 that hadn't given anything. Mm. And we were right there in the bottom. And that broke my heart. I started praying and got in the corner of my office and just started crying. I said, God, I want to be in the top 100 in the nation. And I shared that with a few people. We hired a guy by the name of Kirby St. John, mm-hmm. who's got a heart for missions as big as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And we started working and telling people that. And people said, no, you can't do that. You're a small town. You're never going to make it. The You can't. You get, here's how much you'd have to raise. So we wouldn't listen to that. I mean, be careful who you share your vision with.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Not with the turkeys, with the eagles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so don't walk with turkeys, fly with eagles. So we just started out doing what we felt we needed to do to expose our new congregation of Catholics, Lutherans, to the idea of missions, and they bought into it. And we told them, listen, missions opens the door of miracles. They believed it. And we've seen miracles in their businesses, in their families, in their homes, their finances, marriages. And I said, well, you know, God touched your marriage. It might be because of that missions giving you've given. You know, I don't know. But you planted a seed and you're harvesting. So that, of course, Kirby came in my office one weekday and said, hey, what if we give $11,000 to missions? What if? So I said, Kirby, let's do it. We're just finished our first capital campaign, and he didn't get the 11,000. He got 25,000. And again, of course, that movement began, the 3-2-1 thing. And during our capital campaign, our kids have gone over the top. A lot of them have given money towards the capital campaign. I had a 12 and an 11 and a 13-year-old give me a lot of money. Plus, they gave money. They're single. Their dad just died. And they're giving me money for my building. So I get in this building program. And these two kids could have bought four-wheelers with that money. They could have bought bubble gum for the rest of their lives, you know, but they didn't. They gave it to the church, and then they gave to missions. And, of course, we've led the country. I don't know, the years we were in this building process, I think we were still on the top. Last year was top three in the nation. You know, so those are things that Kyle and Kirby have really stirred. Kirby. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it going, and Kirby's ceiling became Kyle's floor, and wow. Kyle took off from there, you know, and has taken this thing to another level. And the neat story was that we had Convoy of Hope here, and through COVID, they lost a lot of support. Mm. And so I just called him, said, what do you need? I said, we need a new truck. I said, what's that going to cost? $150,000. I said, I think we can do it. So the kids, you know, we can rally the kids together. We could do a service Sunday morning and join with the kids. And we had Mike McDonald up here, and we didn't raise $150,000 for one truck. We raised $350,000 for two trucks, with the kids motivating that with their giving. So inspired the adults. Some of them were in the church for only a few weeks, came in with tears that whole week and said, we've never experienced anything like that. Mm-hmm. And gave towards Convoy of Hope. Yeah, so we would say we've got the heart of mission. Of course, your heart can always stop beating. You've got to keep your heart healthy. So we're always looking for ways to motivate our people to keep focused outward.
I think that one of the things I've heard Louis Giglio say often with Passion Movement is that Jesus doesn't build the church on the talents of a few, but on the sacrifices of many.
Right.
And I think that that's just where my mind goes of, it's not just a few people. This is the sacrifice of a teenager.
Yeah.
This is the, and that, like, that's the miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000. Mm-hmm. Is the sacrifice can provide miracles, and it, you can be young, you can be old. And I really love that.
Well, I just think of even just the double portion, even just you sharing numbers, like God went above and beyond, like what goal we can humanly set. Mm-hmm. And I would just love to hear your thoughts for the person who's in leadership and they're just trying to like navigate some of those challenges. Like, yep, we met the goal or we didn't meet the goal. For the person in leadership who might need like a faith me up when it comes to the blessings of God, how would you encourage them?
Yeah. In fact, this last capital campaign, like I said, 2016 was, I kind of call it my year from hell, started off with a failed capital campaign, you know, so even this church started with coming out of the darkest moments of my ministry. It's where my parents tried to attract me out of it. That's where that prayer foundation that probably started 2 or 3 years earlier helped, but out of those crises or those dark times, that's where the seed is germinating. It's, you're quitting too early. You're quitting before it happens. If I had to quit when the architect came back and the construction company came back, said it's not 4.5 million, it's 7.2. I could have quit. And that was discouraging. On top of that was that failed capital campaign that we hired somebody to do who didn't understand rural ministry. And I knew that. So that was not on them. It's on me, you know? So, you know, don't quit. It's at those dark times that God begins to show up. If you just say, Lord, it's dark now, but I know your word says I can do all things through you. I'm gonna play that card right now. Or you just find those verses that just say, look at, I can do all things through Christ. Now, Lord, I'm gonna play that card right now. And this dream I didn't come up with, this is a dream you put in my heart. So stick with his word, stick in prayer, and don't look at your circumstances. Look at Christ. Keep your eyes on him.
Oh my gosh. And what would you say to the next generation about maybe they're feeling discouraged? Maybe they're feeling overwhelmed. Maybe they feel like I do at times, where I feel like God gave me a vision that it seems impossible. I just don't know how it could ever happen. Mm-hmm. How talk to that person who needs some encouragement.
Well, I go back to that whole idea, don't give up. You know, I mean, Peter was pretty discouraged, I'm sure, when he denied Christ three times, saw this guy, he put all his faith, put all his marbles in his basket, say, you're going to be the Christ. And now you didn't even put up a fight. You just, and I watched you get beat brutally. And then you go to the cross. They didn't understand. And a lot of times we don't understand, why are we going through this? What's going on? Well, imagine Peter. And it was so overwhelming to him that he just said, I don't know the guy. I don't know the jerk. No, don't get me in this mess. And then Jesus looking him in the eyes and saying, hey, remember, I told you that would happen. Mm-hmm. So where did he go? He went where Jesus found him, went back fishing. Jesus found him fishing, and he went right back. And that's what we do when we get discouraged. We go right back to what happened when we were saved. Go back to drinking. Go back to our dysfunctional life. And I look at David. David's a great hero. David had been promised to be a king. He got anointed king. And for 13 years, he ran for his life. And finally, at the end of those 13 years, he wins a battle, but he goes home and his city is wiped out. He's got all his buddies with him, his friends with him, and they're saying, David, where's our wives and children? Where's our houses and our belongings? They've all been taken. You have nothing left. And it made his friends so mad. They turned on him. They were going to kill him. And David said this. David said, he encouraged himself in the Lord. And that's what we have to do. I mean, not this is, I can take you around the church and show you all the victories, but they're preceded with dark moments and some difficult times. You know, when we first phase, we built, I didn't think we built what we could have, but we built, and someone says, hey, meet me in church on Saturday night. It's cold, December, wind's blowing. We've got the wood structure up. We don't even have the cement in it. It's dark. And they said, look what you've done to us. I said, what? He said, you've got this foyer here. It's big enough for a whole church. And then you got that big box over there. We're going to be the laughing stock of our city. So it really is discouraging. I said, listen, you had a chance to vote on this at a special business meeting. Why don't you stand up then? Why are you turning on us now? No, I think we should put an end to this. So I went home that Saturday night before Sunday morning church and just stayed up and prayed until God encouraged me. That's what you have to do. You've got, David did it. He encouraged himself in the Lord. And what happened? Mm-hmm. He got all his stuff back. And 3 days later, after 13 years, 3 days later, after his lowest point, he was king. Mm.
So good. Pastor Eddie, I'm just reminded of so many times we can see somebody's success of where they are. Exactly what you're saying, like, you saw the vision before it was even existed. The people voted. They said, yes, let's do this. They had your back. And even the outsider coming in now, like even us, when we got the first tour, we're like, this is incredible. Like, praise God, they were able to do this. But we didn't see everything, the blood, sweat, and tears shed, and the prayers prayed. And I think sometimes as leaders, we can emulate other pastors or other positions or other individuals who are doing maybe more than what we're doing, or maybe something that we think or we want to do as leaders. And we get in this comparison trap, and we get in this not seeing the full picture because we just see the end. We don't see everything that took place prior. And I think that's just a great reminder that even in our darkest moments, God can encourage us. And as leaders for such a time as this, like, we need to have the word of God written and sealed on our heart. We need to go back to the prayer closet. We need to take, you know, like you said, I'm going to play this card. Okay, Lord, if you said it, you're going to do it. I just don't know how or when, but I'm just going to keep submitting this to you until you come into play and you just download the next best thing, you know? And sometimes we talk about all the time, like, what do we need to do today? Like, what is our first and one step today? And it's just taking that small bite. You know, you see the elephant in the room. You're like, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Exactly.
Same thing with a project or beginning a ministry with the end in mind, because we want to end well. And I think for the listener and for the reader of this book, like, they are going to want to hopefully end well. And sometimes people give up too quickly. They jump ship, or they turn around the other direction, or go back to what they knew, just like you were talking about with Peter. How have you learned to trust and believe God when it comes to those big dreams or an idea? And where can the leader start?
You know, I had small victories in the past. And you put those in that jar in the back of your brain. Say, okay, I did this little one. Did the first phase, maybe we do the second phase. And you live on your past experiences. So you look back a little bit. You look inward, can I do this? And then you look forward, it can happen. So those three directions, I'm looking back. Okay, David did it again. I killed the bear, although the Vikings couldn't, but they killed the bear. Killed the lion.
Too soon.
Killed the bear, killed the lion. You know, what is this uncircumcised Philistine? You know, so you got this past to pull back. So, you like you said, I like that, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So you look back at those things and look, I came into this ministry. I didn't know what in the world to do. I had no clue what to do. And I just began, just kept doing it. Keep moving that step by step by step. You just keep moving forward. And as you do that, God rewards your faithfulness. And one of the things that came out of the prayer and fasting in Waupaca years ago, before we started the church, was that Cheryl's pastor asked what she was doing there. And she said, well, Danny's out of the camp. He's praying and fasting. I'm going to go meet him. So he drove from Appleton out there. And I asked him these questions. Some of those you're asking me. I said, Dan, you're so successful. You got this huge church that when I came to your church for the first time, it was just this little dinky church with 35 people. And it smelled like the men's bathroom. I mean, it stunk to high heavens, and you had holes in your sheetrock, and now you got this big, beautiful church. What did you do? What was it that you did? Tell me what you did. And I started getting ready to write. He said, well, I never prayed or fasted like you do. I was just faithful. I said, no, Dan, more than that. Tell me. No, I just faithful. What? Yeah, faithful to my wife, faithful to my God, faithful to my church. And that's all he was, faithful. Well, tell me your prayer life. Yeah, I really didn't pray a whole lot. I prayed, but not like you're praying. I said, really? And I said, I was looking for some secret formula. It was just being faithful to God. And when he left, I cried. I said, well, I can do that. I can be faithful. And on top of that, I can pray.
You know? But you've already been doing.
Yeah. So I said, let's go do this thing. So I look back at those experiences, and I left there so excited. And you guys have as I do as well, people that when we do get discouraged, we can lean back and say, hey, come and help us. When we started the church, I didn't know what to do. Who would I call? Arvid Kingsrider. this story makes me cry. Arvid was in the district office, assistant superintendent. He'd planted 5 churches. Said, Arvid, I'm up here. I don't have no clue what to do. And nothing's going well. It's, you know, I've got a handful of people. And for a lot of people, they'd been happy with what I had. Wow, you have that many people? Yeah, but I'm looking for hundreds, I'm looking for thousands, you know. I had a bigger dream than that. And Arvid, what he said on the phone, I don't know. I was so discouraged. I can't remember what he said. I hung up on the phone. Hour and a half later,
He shows up.
Here comes this German Shepherd. Walking through my door. Sit in front of my desk. Sit. What can I do for you? And I said, Arpa, I don't know what to do. I'm scared. I'm building a house I don't have money for. I don't have a check that I get in the mail. I don't know what to do. And he shared with me for probably an hour and a half and walked out. And I cannot write down what he said to me, but I knew for the first time someone believed in me.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's all the motivation I needed. Mm. And after that, so that was a period of my life. I needed that. Mm-hmm. So I think many times we get proud. Mm-hmm. And I'm leaning on people right now who have gone through the season of life I'm going through. Mm-hmm. I'm calling them. I'm talking. I'm asking them questions, so that when those times come, your generation says, "Hey, listen, I've got these big, huge dreams." Well, the dream is free.
Right.
The journey is not.
Right.
Yeah.
You got to pay. But the reward, if you've seen the church here and the people, the lives have changed. The reward is more than what you'll ever dream it could be. So yeah, don't quit. Find something. There's all these experiences in the Bible that we have got, that God's given us. Joseph, he had a dream, and what happened? His life fell apart. He ended up in prison, lied about, cheated on. He was disillusioned, I'm sure, at times, but he stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And he became the second most powerful person in the world, mm-hmm. because he was faithful. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So good.
That story about Arvid Kingsrider, it hits me right there. Yeah. He planted the church that my parents met at, that I, gave my life to Christ in, was raised in, was blessed and sent out of that church. And
you were ordained in that, we were married in.
Yeah.
Wow.
You were on staff at.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I've heard you share that story about Arvid, and I go, mm-hmm. wow. Yeah. He has a book called Move and I Will Move.
Yeah.
How God is the church planter. And when he says move, that's when you move. Yeah. And I'd highly recommend it to the listeners to check out that book. If you can find it, it's not in print.
It's over here somewhere.
But I love that story. You've been one of those people to me who's believed in me, who's mm-hmm. been that knock at the door. Kirby St. John, he's been one of those people for us. I remember when we took a step of faith to launch a new ministry, and we feel like it's never been done before. And Kirby proceeded to just tell us miracle story after miracle story right out of this house, mm-hmm. here at River of Life Church in Cold Spring. And there's miracles. Are you up for sharing a story or two about whether you've talked about the miraculous financial provision, but what about the breakthrough miracle power to meet somebody who's far from God when all things look hopeless and helpless and friendless? Does a miracle story come to mind?
Well, yeah, I worked the east side of St. Paul. There was a kid that everybody wrote off, said, hey, he's not going to make it. In the yearbook, they had all these quotes, the one most likely to succeed, and all these different awards. And they wanted to put one in there, the one that most likely is not going to make it. And they're going to put the name of this kid in there. And it ended up, he began to live the life that everyone expected. Even his parents said he'd be nothing but a drunken bum, so watched his life go that direction. And he went out to a Bible college. It was, wasn't an AG Bible college, but went out there to just get some information and some help, and walked into one of the dorms, and they had the name of the person. His name was on the number one, 10 top most wanted in his prayer list. And he was number one. And for him to get that big of a turnaround would take a pretty big miracle. And that was me. Mm. So
but I want interruption.
Yeah, I look back and I had to share that story with people. In fact, my past still comes up. Things I did as an idiot in high school or college. Just came back up. That's why the year from hell was 2016. One of those situations came up. And when I met with my family, my sister just bawled and said, you know what, Denny, we know now that what you would have been if you wouldn't have found Christ. Mm. And my kids, I think at that time, and the church realized the miracle that God performed in me. And so that's why I think if God can do it in me, he can do it anyway. And that's what I take to the pulpit here. And because we see a lot of people coming in that have just been so lost so long and so deep in the pit, it's hard to see these people. Well, I like what Corey Tenboom says, there is no pit too deep that God is not deeper still. You know, so yeah. she experienced as well. Yeah, so that's a miracle. And now I'm seeing that here. I'm seeing meth addicts are on my board, or I'm seeing people whose marriages have just simply fallen apart in a miserable way. Mm. And now they're in my leadership, you know. So we're seeing that all the time. So it's exciting to see what God's doing. But I have the story. I can say, if he did it to me, he can do it to you.
Mm. Yeah, that's so good.
The subject of the book is such a time as this, grasping a heaven-minded urgency for every generation, every nation. Any kind of closing thoughts on, man, the times now? Why is now a great time to be alive? Oh, and why does God have a heart for every nation and every generation?
Yeah, I think that's, I like the way you put that, because I've met a lot of people throughout the country that are saying, wow, they're pulling out of the culture. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the opposite of what God's called us to do. It looks tough. We're worried about what's going to happen to our kids, how it's going to influence our kids. And I think Kirby and Kyle and I all say the same thing. You know, you spend 1 hour with that kid, I don't care what the world pours into them. Just if the parent will spend 1 hour, everything the world's poured into for 8 hours, you can pull out through a good relationship with them. But I think that the world, yeah, the gender confusion things, it's a big deal out here as well. I mean, in the inner city, it's a big deal. You know, the woke agenda that they have for our public education, a big deal. How are we going to stop it? You know what? I really think it's time for the Christians to stand up and be the light. Jesus said this, let your light so shine before man that they might see your good works. And when they see your good works, they're going to glorify your Father who is in heaven. But a lot of us are saying, oh boy, I'm going to take my light and put it on the bushel basket because I don't want to be involved with what's going on in America. I think we need to start running for our public office. Mm-hmm. We had two, but we have one now, House of Representatives. We've got a number of people who are running for school board. That's what we have to do.
Yeah.
Is attack. Yeah. Don't retreat, attack. Mm-hmm. You know, so I pray a prayer. And people have asked me to write it down and give it to them. I said, oh, get your own prayer. But here's the prayer I pray. I said, you may be the head, not the tail, the top, not the bottom. You call me to victory, not defeat. I'm going to advance the gospel, not retreat. I'm a child of God. I have the ability to hear from God. I choose to hear from God today and obey him completely because I love him deeply. And that, you know, I'm here to attack, not to retreat, mm-hmm. you know. So if I'm going to retreat, it's going to be into a time of prayer and fasting. And then I'm back out and got my armor on. I'm ready to go. So I think it's time for us to stand up to the culture. You know, the question I've asked people for years is the church a friend of the culture or an enemy of the culture? A lot of people don't answer. We are the culture. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. We are the culture.
Wow.
We're the ones who are to say, listen, let's create the climate. Let's take the thermostat and put it to the temperature. We want it and not. But what we're seeing in America today and throughout the world is because the church is we've stopped praying. We've stopped believing God's word. I watched a documentary in one of our sister churches, not the AG, that was they claimed to be losing 250 people a day, members a day.
Wow.
And it was on the decline of the American church. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, 250 people a day. And so they interviewed one of these guys and said, well, why did you leave this church? And they said, well, we knew what we didn't believe, but we didn't know what we did believe. We knew who we hated, but we didn't know who we liked. So they stopped preaching the gospel. They started getting political and start preaching the gospel.
Yeah.
And we have the answers. So that's why we have here people from every corner of our culture, every corner of our community. Rich and poor, young and old, with a lot of young people, because we're just going to stick with the word, and that's where we need to go. Is this your generation's taking the baton now, and that's stick with the basics, go with it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I love it.
Are you up for a bonus, which is five questions in 5 minutes? We put 5 minutes on the clock.
Okay.
Five and five. And these people might not know about you or hear you preach in a sermon or on a podcast like this, but you ready for a challenge?
Let's see if we can do it.
First
five
question.
Questions, 5 minutes.
Okay, right. You ready?
First question. What is one of your favorite hobbies for fun?
Fishing. I like to fish and hunt. In fact, if you weren't here, I'd be in a tree. You know, and you have to do that. You have to get out.
Yeah.
You have to get out and just get out. And that's how I that's one of my prayer closets is just sitting in a stand, nobody around me, taking out my tablet and just reading and enjoying nature. And it's a stress reliever.
That's so good. What is one of the secrets to have a successful marriage?
Learn two words. Yes, ma'am.
Oh. What would she respond with?
She'd say, yes, sir. She'd say, that's right. Yeah, you know what? That's love your wife. In fact, we got Christmas now, and I'm looking for a Christmas message. I think the best gifts we can give our kids is time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give them
yeah.
your time. Not some people say, I want to give them some quality time this week. Nah, quality time isn't scheduled. Quality time is birthed out of quantity time. And this is a great time to do it. The second gift you can give your kids is love your spouse and let them see it. Let them never question that. Never hear them whisper, is mommy and daddy going to stay together? Let them know, hey, there is just no chance. So love your wife. Yeah.
I love it. Here's the curveball. We like sports, but if this keeps us on our toes, we never know what's coming. If you could ask Mike and I anything, what would you want to know today?
I could ask you anything. What would you want to know today? Oh my goodness. You guys are you're the complete package. What's your long-term goal?
Oh man. Well, we started our marriage beginning with the end in mind, and that was marriage, ministry, family. So I think the end goal is ultimately to live and leave a legacy bigger than ourselves. I think we learned,
perfect.
I mean, elements of that from Roger Lane, like when we shared a dream with him, it became his dream. And it's like, who do you meet that can do that? So I think that's definitely what we want to be known for, is leaving people in places better than we found them. And the long-term goal is to teach people how to do that and point people to Christ in the process, that we're not the answer. We're not God. We're not the Holy Spirit. We can point them in that direction and call a generation, the people out. I'm going to call you up in love and truth. And yeah, I think those are some things.
100%.
And your generation needs that.
Yeah.
You guys have been appointed for such a time as this.
Wow.
I feel it. I don't know. Well, we feel it.
I think for me, you just both said it. Like, for me, the end goal is like seeing hell empty, heaven filled, specifically with young adults. I heard my youth pastor share this when I was trying to figure out my direction in life, surrendering my God, like my calling, my future. God, what do you want to do? And I heard like 2 out of 3 people who grow up in church are walking away. And I look around and no one's reacting at all. I'm like, he might have well just said, amen, go do something about
but
it.
But you heard like the building's on fire.
I was like, I want my generation to know the goodness of God in the land of the living. Our favorite psalm, I think, is Psalm 145:4. There's many good ones, but this one says one generation is to tell the next of the marvelous deeds of God.
Yeah.
You've met our girls. You've prayed for our girls. And like, if we can pass them only one thing, if the building is on fire and you got time to grab them and one thing, it's, man, God's goodness in the land of the living. That's our hope.
Wow.
Good.
Yeah, good.
All right. Question number 4. If you could go anywhere and bring a snack, where would you go and what would you bring?
Oh, my goodness.
This is a fun one, hopefully.
Yeah, I would probably go to South Africa. Yeah, I love South Africa.
Like an African safari type thing?
Yeah, well, there's a ministry we've connected with there, and we can go on a safari as a relaxation, but we help with the human trafficking in that area. So I'd go there, and gosh, the snack, their food there is just like here. I would bring mashed potatoes and gravy and roast beef.
Right.
Roast beef sandwiches, yeah.
Oh, my word, I love it.
To wrap up, final thought, question 5 of 5 is, Pastor Denny, if you could leave maybe the listener or the reader with one piece of hope to hold on to, what would you want them to know?
Yeah, God hasn't given up on you. Don't you give up on yourself. no matter how dark it is or how difficult it is, the sun begins to shine just after the darkness. The dawn comes after the darkness. You've got to learn that, and you learn that throughout every season of your life. Don't quit. Too many people are quit. The easiest thing is to quit. And someone says there's a lot of parking spots on the way to realizing your vision. A lot of places to pull over, just pull over and say that I've had enough. And I've seen too many people quit. Too many people give up. My generation, especially, just give up. And they stay in ministry, but what they do is they take their dream, put it in a box because of difficulties, stick it in a closet and lock it. Mm. And then they just exist instead of thriving. You know, we've been called to thrive. Mm. And that's what I tell that generation.
Oh my gosh. So well, that's our heart for the reader, for the listener, for the viewer, is you are alive to thrive. We pray that you feel alive. And Pastor Denny, great big thank you. This was awesome.
It was fun. You guys are my heroes. I just love to see you guys in action as a team. What a good team. Mm-hmm. And then to see those little kids come alongside, those are going to be your best tools for evangelism.
Oh man.
Are those kids.
They're having fun. So yeah. I love it.
Well, this is the Young Adults Today podcast. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode right here on the Young Adults Today podcast. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe. That way you'll never miss a thing. And if you enjoy streaming or listening or watching the Young Adults Today Leader podcast, I have a hunch that you will benefit from a couple other resources. The first is our Facebook community called Young Adult Ministry Leaders. That link is in the show notes in the episode description, where you can join a community of 2,700 other young adult ministry leaders across the globe. The second, we have coaching communities launching this April designed for you to grow as a lifelong learner with other next gen pastors, young adult ministry leaders, and campus missionaries from across the country, where the link is in the show notes. You can click on coaching communities. The last is we have a 3-book bundle, Reaching the Next, Next Gen Now, and Equip the Saints are our Young Adults Today resource book bundle, where these are great for bringing your board, your staff, your small group, or your leadership team. There's discussion guides, and really you can learn from 13 ways to engage young adults, equipping and understanding engaging young adults, and then raising up an army in the next generation. These books are available individually or in the book bundle when you visit youngadults.today. Thanks so much. We'll see you next episode right here on the Young Adults Today podcast. Plug me in. I'm all wired up right now. Plug me in. I'm getting charged up right now. Yeah.